Tonight, join Coyote Chris Sutton on a journey that will take you through all things spiritual and supernatural. Chaos magic, religion, UFOs, the paranormal, cryptozoology, and the spirits that walk among us. Travel down this path of enlightenment and be prepared for anything with your host, Coyote Chris.
The drums always get me fired up. Good evening, everybody. This is Coyote Chris Sutton here, your host on all things spiritual and supernatural. And I'm looking forward to a great show tonight and with our guest, who I will introduce in a minute. I'm tickled to death to have her, more ways than one. Hope everybody's had a great day and that you're ready to listen to some good stuff here. Just want to make sure that everybody's doing well, and that you're all kicked back and ready to go. We're going to be talking at the end of the show about where we're going to be and things like that. Now, tonight we're going to do a little different. We're going to do our show, then we're going to bring Bill and Danielle on from Incubi Incarnate, and we're going to talk about the Mineral Wells Paracon. It's going to be happening down in Mineral Wells, Texas, December 4th through the 6th, and we're going to get some insight into that and some talk about the guests, some other things going on. So we're going to put that in at the end of the show because we're running a little bit longer tonight, which is all cool with us. Now, the person I'm going to introduce as my guest is one of the coolest people. She's one of these friends of mine that I've had for a couple of years now, old Twitter and Facebook and texting and all that kind of stuff. This is the first time I've really gotten a chance to talk to her. She's a wonderful person. She's very gifted in what she does, and she does a lot of things. She is a pop culture professor herself. That's Dr. Rebecca Housel. Good evening, Rebecca. How you doing?
Hey, how are you, Chris? I'm so glad to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and I am doing well, thank you. Except the fact my watch went out, and my wife just went out and picked out a new one, so I'm not real crazy about that, but that's things you got to go through in life, you know. You got to shop wood and carry water and do the clothes. So, you know, you've been on a lot of different shows, and I know you've talked about all sorts of different things. Just as a little bit general background to let folks know who you are, the ones who haven't heard you before. What can you tell us a little bit of, you know, what can you tell us about yourself?
Well, I became the pop culture professor a very long time ago. I don't even want to say how long ago because then I will age myself. And I look good
young,
in that picture.
You're still younger than me. Remember that. So it's okay.
Well, you know, one day I'll be saying that to somebody. I actually say that to my boyfriend now. I'll be like, you know, I'm like 20 years older than you. Anyway.
Carry
on. Yeah, the other day on Twitter, Pippin Parker, who is a friend of mine, he's Sarah Jessica's brother, you know, but he's famous himself for other things. He was kind of making fun of me for my young boyfriend, but what can I do?
Hey, if it works for you, it works.
Well, I don't know if it's really working for me, but, you know, I had something that did, but it doesn't seem to be anymore. When I became the pop culture professor a long time ago, when I started to use pop culture in the classroom, because I was doing work with students who were basically engineers for the most part, mm-hmm. and they were just going to have a little interruption. There may be a dog noise in a second, but okay, all right. I think we're clear. We just had a dog handoff here. The dog has been a bane in my existence for, yep, there she goes, for interviews. Yeah, poor Seth Everett. We had it on from ESPN. It was like a killer interview because she was making noise the whole time and I was home alone. So anyway, back to pop culture professor stuff. ADD. ADD, it's live. It's live, everybody. So I basically started incorporating pop culture, things that I liked, like comics and movies and video games, yes, it's true, into writing assignments. And then I began writing about it and publishing and working with my friend and the series editor, Bill Irwin, of the Philosophy and Pop Culture series with Wiley. And before that, we were with Open Court. And there's like a ton of those series now. He was the first one, though, to come up with it. And next year I have my own series coming out, and it's all about pop culture stuff. Star Wars and, Game of Thrones and Walking Dead. Bring it. Oh, I can't wait for that. I can't wait for that season to start. My God, I love those freaking zombies. Like, I'm starting to think zombies are hot. That's when you know you have a problem.
you're in pretty deep if you think those guys are hot. Yeah, okay.
I guess I'm in some trouble. But
I got to take a psychological look at this now. Now, you're okay, into things that fall apart, shamble around, moan, eat brains, and fall apart. So what does that mean, Dr. Housel, when you acquire a affinity for such things?
I think it means that I've had some bad relationships.
Yeah, I think so.
When I start to like The Walking Dead, it probably means I need to change my who I'm attracted to,
Yeah.
I'm headed in that direction anyway. And I'm doing good, I think. I don't know. I'll have to keep you guys posted. But pop culture professor stuff started a long time ago, and I'm so happy to, have done things, worked with Comic-Con, and literally, I don't want to say I've done all of Hollywood because that sounds just wrong, but I have worked with, everybody in Hollywood. I have, one degree of separation from almost every famous person ever, as well as our president, because of my pop culture stuff. I actually met Rahm Emanuel in Chicago about a year ago. I know.
That's cool.
It is super cool. And Perry Chen, the chairman of Kickstarter, came to see me give a talk for the Renaissance Society at University of Chicago about pop culture. Yeah, I mean, crazy stuff. This guy, Theaster Gates, who's a super famous artist and New York Times profile dude, totally rebuilding Chicago. I'm like, oh my God, how many people does this pop culture thing really? I mean, it touches so many lives. It's really incredible to me.
It's all over. I mean, it's in every part of our life anymore. I mean, it's just all over the place. And, you wrote a book called X-Men and Philosophy, correct?
Oh, yes.
I picked off the website. Okay, so, and I've got Lord of the Rings and Philosophy, the Zen of Star Wars. I've got books, or Buddhism and Star Wars, that type of stuff. I love that stuff. So with X-Men and Philosophy, we're talking about pop culture here and how it gets into our lives. How does X-Men do that, and how does it compare philosophically with some of the, philosophical paths that people have taken during the time?
Well, what I love about you, Chris, and, you had mentioned when you started the show, which was a very nice intro, by the way, how we've been friends for a while, and, you really helped talk me down at a point when I needed to remember some important life philosophies. And X-Men is like that for me, too. X-Men started at a time in our country's history, 1962. Stan Lee worked for Martin Goodman, who was a relative for Timely Comics. And their first comic was Marvel #1. And that's why when Stan became, kind of took over the business, essentially, many, many years later, in 62, he called it Marvel because the first comic for Timely was Marvel #1. And one of the first comic lines was X-Men. And remember, Stan Lee was really Stan Lieber. Jack Kirby was Jacob Kurtzberg. And there were a lot of Jews in the industry simply because it was considered low culture. Right now, pop culture means everybody loves it. It's an everybody thing. But culture used to be high and low. It was literally described as high culture and low culture, and comics were considered low culture.
Right.
So that's why Jews were allowed to work in it.
it was the old saying, lowbrow was what they would call that type of stuff.
Yeah, which is amazing today that what I love about it, and I know Stan Lee. I mean, he was on tour with me in Wizard World, and, we've met, and, he would come and, I'd be moderating for somebody like Jason David Frank, who was the Green Ranger and White Ranger for Power Rangers, and a very good friend of mine. And JDF would be, we'd be sitting on stage and Stan Lee would just kind of pop out, up the side, like a magical superhero or something. And the guy was at that time, this was last year when this happened, I think it was New Orleans, and he just popped on stage. I mean, literally, he's more mobile than me, and he was like, I think 92 at the time. I couldn't believe it. I was freaking out too, and I knew him, and I was like, oh, Stan Lee, and I'm like literally bowing like an idiot on stage in front of like 800 people. I'm like, oh my god. And JDF is laughing his ass off because I'm like having a totally fangirl moment, even though we were in the green room with Stan earlier. But JDF was surprising me. They had made this little arrangement to freak me out, which worked. It worked. But Stan started this X-Men thing in 62, which was about a year after the Eichmann trial. And that's important because, of course, the X-Men are a group of genetically different humans, basically, who are considered separate from everybody else and are always persecuted, constantly persecuted. In fact, even one of the comic storybook lines, Days of Future Past, has them ghettoized, isolated and ghettoized, just like the Jews were, and hunted. And so it's very clearly, Jewish people in that way, just like Superman. You know, Siegel and Schuster were Jewish, I think that their families had come from, like, Russia. I think that it was somewhere in that area. I don't remember exactly where their parents were from, but I know that they were children of Jewish immigrants, like Stan Lee, like Jack Kirby, and they were writing about, literally, an Übermensch, which was something that Hitler used in his, basically, propaganda to develop the Aryan people, which he even misused that.
He bastardized that from Nietzsche. This Superman sort of thing,
Oh, I can't tell you. Being a fan of Nietzsche, I'm so mad at Hitler for that, because that guy was a genius.
Oh,
it's true. He ended his life in a very weird way, and he was running around naked with horses toward the end, but he was, he had gone crazy, but he wasn't crazy when he wrote those philosophies, and truly today.
It's funny he came up, because I got this little thing. I keep it up on my little altar here. I keep stuff. That's a quote from Nietzsche. Beware that when fighting monsters, you yourself do not become a monster. For when you gaze long into the abyss gazes also into you. And I keep that up there just to remind myself, if I go out, if I get too infatuated with this ghost hunting stuff and things like that, or, taking on the evil stuff or, things that are negative, to always remember that.
That's a great quote, and I actually very pertinent to my current, what I'm thinking about right now and what's happening in my life right now, dealing with people that are, just like terrorists. They are terrorists, actually, in some way, and they're terrorizing me, and in order to defend myself, when I was living in Atlanta, which, I've had to leave as a result of this whole thing, I actually...
Right.
purchased a gun, and I think we talked about this as friends, but I'm a vegetarian, an ethical vegetarian. In other words, I don't eat meat, not because I don't like it, but because I need to for my health, but because I don't want to sustain my life on death.
Right.
I don't want to kill to support my life. I just don't. And so when I, actually had to get a gun because I was that threatened, I realized just what you just read, that and I decided to leave. I decided to leave just so I wouldn't ever pull the trigger. I know I felt like I needed to have it. I didn't want to die myself, and I felt that threatened that I felt the need to defend myself. But I decided I don't want to die, but I don't also want to kill anybody. And we are also people that believe in, life is more than what we know, and I've had a lot of paranormal experiences in the last 2 years especially, and I'm not going there, I would rather give up my job, give up my home, and be penniless, and, live, with people that, are sort of, for 2 months, I was living all over the place, and it's from a suitcase, all because of this whole thing. And I feel like, you really don't want to become the monster. It's really easy to do that, to justify. That's the philosophy part, and that's what makes X-Men so great, actually. There's always that struggle, and that's the writing was so good in the comic that it's still relevant today, and can be applied to things today, which I just love. You know, we can relate it to our lives, but on a grand scale, I mean, look at everything that's happening. You know, my God, why does somebody walk up to people doing their jobs on the street, you know, a reporter and a cameraman, and shoot them?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a great example of becoming the monster. You know, you gaze into the abyss, and instead of, you know, instead of saying, I'm going to protect people from the abyss, you actually, you become swallowed up by it. And, yeah, it's terrible, terrible stuff.
Your own darkness
gives hope.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, right? It's crazy.
Yeah, it's you know, you think, you know, I'm not a big proponent of, the of you know, of raw evil, you know, of Satan and that sort of thing. But, you know, you see these things like this, and it just becomes seems to become a more commonplace. And it's like, in I go back to my own teachings, what I've learned on the path, and it's like there does seem to be some sort of darkness that it falls on people's hearts. It gives them the excuse, or they feel justified in through their egos to do these types of things. And it's a scary thing.
It's very frightening. And like, you know, like I referred to earlier, crime was, you know, something that I was experiencing against me every day, breaking and entering. Mm-hmm. And there was all kinds of things, you know, that were happening that were really very scary. You know, arrows were being shot into my home. I mean, this is, like you said, you almost wonder, are these people under a spell? But it's really not. It's a certain psychology, and it's just like you said, it's ego. It's a sense of entitlement that somehow, if people knew the truth, they would understand and understand that these people are justified in their crimes, you see, because that's mental illness. And I was talking about this earlier on Twitter with my friend Dave from Baltimore, and we were talking about how low socioeconomic status, which is what I'm from, and so I can speak to this directly in this way, contributes greatly to not only physical health and well-being, but also mental illness. And, you know, a lot of the things that have been happening, like what we talked about earlier with the gunman and the cameraman and that poor reporter, my God, this evening or earlier today or maybe yesterday, some young man, 34 years old, attacked his mother in her home. Like, you know, people are just doing crazy things. And it's gotten to the point where my friends, like in Europe, like Ireland and England, are kind of making fun of Americans because shootings are so common here.
They
don't all make the international news now. It's just like, oh, well, those Americans are killing each other again. Oh, okay. I mean, it's really nuts. And
they're
really has
freaking
to
animals.
With, well, it's really about genetics. And that low socioeconomic status, which can only really be solved through education or an increased education. I'm a big proponent of extending public education, not through a bachelor's degree because we simply don't have the money, but at least through an associate's, because when public education was first introduced, you needed at least a high school diploma to make a middle-class salary. Now it is at least an associate's degree. You can be a paralegal, you can be an x-ray tech, you can be, you know, all these different dental hygienists, all kinds of professional things with a two-year degree where you can make between $35,000 and $50,000 a year and increase your living, your quality of life and the quality of your children's lives exponentially. Otherwise, with just a high school diploma, or maybe not even, you know, you end up living in, like my stalker. You end up, you know, working for $12 an hour and living in a 564-square-foot trailer and, you know, and being a part of this crazy criminal world where mental illness is, I don't know how you can't have it, you know, when you are constantly under the strain of, I mean, I didn't understand, even though I came from it, I didn't understand what was happening, only because I'm not anything different or special. In fact, I'm convinced I'm not. I think it's ADD. I'm going to blame it on the ADD. Forget the alcohol. My mind doesn't stop. And so, you know, people told me my whole life I was stupid and I was only good for having babies and I shouldn't worry about things like college, you know, because I was only going to go get married and crank out some kids. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I think I don't think so.
you showed them, didn't you?
Well, I suppose I did.
Yeah.
I don't know yet. Well, the jury is still out. We'll see. But I just remember, like, before I was able to earn, like, smarter, not harder, which only happens through education, I was living on the edge, too. I could barely afford gas. I could barely afford diapers. I had my son when I was 18, and I was pregnant at 17. So, like, I was just 18 when I had him. And,
yeah.
Oh, what a like, horrible, like, feeling. Every day, I was in so much debt because you just can't make it. I think I was making $8 an hour as a secretary and going to school and, you know, supporting my son and, like, an apartment and a car. And I had no family to help me out. And then later I got a little help. I lived with a grandmother, and then I got married from there. But, my God, it was like I was under so much stress. I was diagnosed with cancer within a few years. Because that's the kind of thing that happens, you know. Your body is under constant strain from cortisol, which we've learned. Yeah. Now the PhD comes out. Now the oncology stuff is going to come out. But you know, the journal Nature came out with a study in 2006 that proved that cortisol is three compounds: two that feed mutating cells. Speaking of mutants and X-Men. You know, the mutating cells in X-Men that actually are real in human bodies, but they become cancer, not special powers.
That's
too
right.
Bad. Or I would be all over the place with those special powers, man. I'd be moving whole objects. I'd be Professor X every day of the week.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be making stuff move. I would be evil, too. I'd be, like, putting things in people's minds, and, you know, I would probably abuse it a little bit. Maybe. I don't know. I think I would, just for funsies. But I'm more mischievous than evil. I don't know. I sort of was reading this article and seeing how the compounds feed these mutating cells and give them little passports. And I think, my God, look at how you have to, when you have low socioeconomic status and you can't earn, you work, and can never earn and can never afford to even go to school. Like, right. I was in that place. And it was awful. And, you know, the things I had to do to get out of that place, I don't even want to say it out loud, and I'm not going to, and I'm not going to write about it. I'm probably going to lie about it for the rest of my life. I don't care. But you do have to do extraordinary things to get out. And, you know, even though there's a lot of great programs, and I have tons of student loan debt, and I will until I die, but, you know, even just to go to school, even just to have the time to go to school, how do you do it? You know, so it would have been fantastic if part of the public education system extended to at least an associate's degree, because then I could have gone for free and not worried about it and just started working. And, I mean, I was working anyway and going to school. But it really just took, like, it took a lot more effort. I had, like, a break in between high school and college because I had to stabilize first. Right. And it would have been so great if even, like, high schools offered associate's degree programs. College professors, just like the AP classes that many high schools, especially in the Northeast, offer, advanced placement, they're called.
Yeah, we got those here, too, huh?
Perfect, right? That's so great because then you get college credit. And and why can't why can't there be enough of those to have an associate's degree's worth? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there has to be a way that we can, you know, do this so that it can basically be very little extra cost per student overall, you know. And I think that it wouldn't help the situations that we face now. It wouldn't help with the gunmen. It wouldn't help with that young man in Florida who beat his mother. It wouldn't help with those people, but it would help in a generation. And in the interim, maybe something like educational seminars offered that show the connection between low socioeconomic status, which is from lack of education, only because you require an education now to earn. But it also, when you do an associate's degree, you're just not doing, like, dental hygienist classes, X-ray tech classes, you're actually learning philosophy, psychology. You're learning about a lot of things that will improve your life and the life of your children. And then, you know, by extension, their children. So I just think, you know, for me, it's epigenetics. It's essentially, which is it's a genetic field where you're born with a certain set of genes, 23 chromosomes from one parent and 23 from another, and then you have your life, and you can change your genes based on what you do. So if you eat organic food and exercise regularly, you know, let's say there's no longevity in your family and there's a lot of disease, you can change your stars literally by by feeding your body and your soul in ways that make you healthier, no matter what your genes say. But you can also do the opposite by smoking and drinking, and these are all things that are part of that low socioeconomic status. More smoking happens, more drinking, more depression, you know, and it leads, and it actually changes genes so that the next generation of people are now more prone to things like schizophrenia. I mean, it's like these things are increasing in number, not decreasing. And when people say, oh, gee, nothing like Columbine ever happened in my day, or, you know, this never happened in the 60s or 70s, you know, no, it didn't. Because the genes we have been building, epigenetics shows us, and it's actually a really good example. Your poor listeners are like, Chris, we don't want to hear about epigenetics. We don't know what this woman's talking about. But India is a really good example, because in India, babies are being born, and because of the fecal matter, the high levels of fecal matter in the water, and waters and in, like, which is in the food as well.
It's filthy.
Children
over
there, that are, I mean, children are being born and they're not absorbing nutrition in the same way. You know, so that's epigenetic. That's not something that existed, you know, even 100 years ago, but it does today. So that's kind of some evidence. And when we think about occurrences of cancer and, you know, all these other social things that are happening, we don't often connect it to physical stuff and our well-being, but it's really about that. And that's why your spiritual path is so important, I think. And I love your show, because you talk about that stuff. Yeah, it's great.
It certainly helped me out. I mean, I was a drinker and a smoker. I still drink occasionally, but I quit smoking about 12 years ago. And but I understand what you're saying, because, I mean, people are out there self. I mean, I've been in the social service field for almost 30 years. People self-medicate themselves through cigarettes, through alcohol, through drugs. You know, you've got these people. I've worked with people who had four generations of people who didn't work. They don't know how to work because they've lived with people who never had a job. And I live in there's some really depressed areas down here where I live near St. Louis, where, like, East St. Louis, Illinois, used to be a big factory town. Had all this stuff going on and jobs and everything else. Had this huge population. Now it's nothing. And you got all these people with nothing to do, and there's no place for them to go to work. They don't have the education. They don't have they don't have the know-how to work. They don't know how to work because nobody's ever taught them. And so, yeah, and so, you know, I agree with what you're saying. I never heard it put that way, but, you know, the increase in mental illness as a genetic manipulation, adverse genetic manipulation through bad habits, through the line of succession there of, you know, of ancestry, could really make an effect on that. That's interesting. I never heard it that way. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've been working on a book since 2003 about this, because it's a longitudinal study, essentially. And I mean, I don't just write about pop culture, although that's what I'm known for, you know, my work in pop culture and my naughty comedy, my sexy interviews with celebs. You know, there's more to, because of my cancer experiences and my early life experiences, I mean, I really wanted to know why. Why did these things happen to me? Why am I always, like, behind? Why am I always sick? Why am I always, like, depressed? What has happened? Like, why? I see other people who are my age, who had supportive families and, you know, went to school and didn't have to fight for every inch of their life. And they don't have the same, I mean, they have problems. Like, everybody has problems, but it's nothing like what I've dealt with. I mean, I don't know anybody my age who's had cancer as many times as I have. I just don't.
Wow.
They really die, you know. I mean, generally, people don't live beyond where, I mean, I'm a miracle. I'm a walking miracle, and I appreciate that so greatly. And I want to know so that people
who face the same things like I did can say, oh, it's possible. I can be a miracle too, because you really can. I changed my genes. I changed them twice in my life already. You know, I was under so much stress, and it's all happened, and now, boom.
Yeah, you can change your genes physically, and you change your story psychologically,
yes.
and become the
yes.
hero instead of the downtrodden. We're going to take a short break here for a commercial, and then we're going to come back, and we'll be talking more with Dr. Rebecca Housel.
Hello, this is Wes Forsythe, host of Paranormal Filler, and I will be at the Scarefest.
Scarefest!
That's what I said.
The largest horror and paranormal convention in the United States.
Do you know where it is?
The Lexington Center, September 11th through the 13th.
Well, I'll be there.
Meet over 80 of your favorite horror and paranormal celebrities.
Like me.
There's a costume ball, seminars, movie screening, and lots of scary merchandise.
Yeah, but I'll be there.
For more info, visit thescarefest.com.
I was going to tell them that.
Scarefest, September 11th through the 13th at the Lexington Center.
Will you give me a chance?
Be brave if you dare, but don't come alone.
Fine, what he said.
And that, of course, was Wes Forsythe with his great commercial there. Oh, Rebecca, I did have a question from Wes, and I will give it to you verbatim, as Wes said it. He said, Chris, if you have a lull in the evening tonight, would you please ask Rebecca why she blocked my ass on Twitter?
I think he might have been a little naughty with me. I think he said something that maybe was, and I mean, I'm like, you know, I'm cool with a lot of stuff, but whatever it was, I think it had something to do that I didn't like it enough that I was done. That's my new strategy, Wes. I just, and you know, don't take it personally, even though it seems very personal. I want no drama, no drama. I've had so much drama this year. I mean, I mourn every day. Every day I grieve. So when somebody even does one thing that makes me feel like, oh my God, it's no. It's just a no. It's an outright no. So I'm going to say, since you put me on the spot on the air, you probably said something you shouldn't have said, and that's why you're blocked.
You're
not going to be unblocked, man.
Yeah, I got my one of my best friends. was a friend of mine on Facebook, and he's much different politically than I am, and so he got into a rant, and I told him to quit it. I posted something, he started ranting in the comments. I said, stop it. He keeps ranting. I said, stop it. He kept going. I said, fine. So I unfriended him. We're still not friends on Facebook. We still talk to each other, but he's not my friend on Facebook.
Yeah,
so
you just can't.
I understand.
Like, I do that too. You just can't, like, that political stuff on Facebook is really interesting, isn't it? It's funny. That's like a political forum for people. It's not that way really on Twitter. I mean, I have like 4,000 plus people on my Twitter feed, and I really don't see a lot of it. I see like a lot of, like, frankly, like a lot of nude stuff.
Yeah. You tend to get that stuff, huh? Okay.
I have a lot of partiers that follow me. I'm glad, though. I mean, I'd much rather have the fun people, you know. Bring it. Bring on the fun. That drama can stay away. Life is way too short. However long it is, it's not long enough for drama. You know, I could live 1,000 years and I wouldn't want drama. I just want peace. Peace, peace, peace. Bring it.
It gets so tiresome. I couldn't agree 100%. I'm like, I just will go miles on my way to avoid drama anymore. If you got something, you're mad at me about something, I'm fine with that. Just tell me. Don't go into a bunch of histrionics and start carrying on, because I don't want to hear it. You know, I can be okay with people being mad at me if I do something that they don't like. I get it. But, oh, man, when they start with the nonsense, it's like, oh, I just can't take it anymore.
Well, that's my that's part of my block strategy. I'm not going to engage in negative anything with people. If I don't feel right about something, I'm not going to explain it to them, you know, why I don't feel right. And then they come back with why they were right. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm just going to avoid. You know, I think that's the way of peace, is just to kind of like, you know, let people feel the way that they're going to feel. I'm not going to take on the world. I am really just looking to spread positive energy everywhere. Yeah. And I can't do that if I'm bogged down by drama. And so that's kind of how I deal with the negativity. And I've always dealt with it that way. I mean, like, I literally was a cheerleader, but I'm like a legit life cheerleader. I have like perpetual pom poms attached to my hands. I won't let them go.
That's true.
You do
that. I mean, your tweets are positive for the most part, and you do encourage people. And that's just great. That's what, you know. That's a good thing that you do.
I
think that's great. Yeah, you do. You do a great job of it. You put out some really neat stuff out there. You know, we're talking about, you know, the X-Men and stuff earlier and pop culture. And, you know, I was thinking prior to us going on about some of the things, like, you know, when you grow up different, you know, than most people, like, I always felt kind of different. And it sounds, you know, you kind of felt kind of different, too. And and so, I mean, I think back, it's like, you know, I didn't hit anything spiritual, really. I didn't have that spiritual lightning bolt until I was 35 years old. But I was like, I started thinking about who were my heroes, you know, when I was growing up, because I just didn't feel like, you know, some of these other people, you know, like, I had baseball heroes. I loved baseball. Sandy Koufax was my first hero. He pitched for the Dodgers. But then I started thinking about, you know, when did I really start getting turned into, who were my spiritual heroes that I didn't know they were my spiritual heroes until I figured it out later. And I thought, you know, when I was in third grade, our teacher read us The Hobbit. And as soon as she described Gandalf, I'm like, bam, that's, you know, for some reason my 8-year-old mind just latched onto that. I said, this guy's cool. I don't know why. You know, and now I know why, because it spoke to something inside of me that made me different. You know, that I was attracted to wizards and shaman and things like that, and that type of you know, helping people. And that's what Gandalf was. Like, Gandalf was a character who went around and motivated people. He wasn't that. He was a great magician, but he was more of a motivator of people, so they could go out and do what they needed to do. That was actually pop culture. I mean, that's what it's what it's become with the movies and whatnot. But it's also, you know, good literature, that with the Lord of the Rings. But I don't know. I wonder how people relate to that, or they see, like, you know, you've written things on the Twilight movies, but somebody who feels not like everybody else, but they pick something out that in a pop culture reference, Star Wars, all these other movies and things like that. Have you had experiences like that yourself, or have you talked to people who have experienced such things?
Oh yeah, of course. You know, for me, I'd relate to all these different stories, you know, just like you did. There'd be a character or something that would relate, that I would, you know, feel connected to in some way. But the ultimate reason why everybody has that moment, like you described with Gandalf, is because of something called the hero's cycle or hero's journey, which scholar Joseph Campbell outlined very thoroughly for all of us. And I'm grateful every day. In fact, it's what George Lucas used to create Star Wars. And I'm happy to say that George Lucas connected with Joseph Campbell before Joseph Campbell's, you know, before he died. And Joseph Campbell spent some of his last days on Skywalker Ranch, which was, you know, a beautiful place to be at that stage of your life. So I felt like that was like a really beautiful story. And Joseph Campbell's hero cycle starts off with somebody, you know, like any of us, who starts off in relative isolation, you know, your community, your family, your friends, you know, in childhood. It's a small world. It feels like a big world, but it's really a small world. And then you receive a call to adventure and something that, you know, and often we're reluctant to do, to move on this call, whatever it might be, because we're afraid. And then we have like a little push from something called the Threshold Guardian, and kind of cross a threshold into the wider world where we face trials. And the difference between a hero and a villain is that during a trial, a hero will have what's called a transformation of consciousness. Their mind will literally change, and they will recognize themselves and their role in the world and how they can better the world. But through their survival, they recognize that they can help the world. Villains survive the trials just as well, but they don't have a transformation of consciousness. They can never transcend the duality of being a good person but having bad things happen to you. You know, like, in other words, it can't be that I'm a good person and bad things are happening to me because I live in the world. It has to be somebody's fault. And
yep.
That's what makes a villain. And so, you know, I when we're talking about these kinds of characters and how I relate to them, people relate to the villains as well as they do to the heroes.
Yeah. Sure, the villains are always the most fun.
Yeah, well, they are, you know. They really are. And some villains are relatable and they're sympathetic, you know. Guys like, and this is taking a leap from our comic books and our Lord of the Rings and Star Wars, I mean, to things like Tony Soprano in the HBO series of Sopranos,
mm-hmm.
or right now, very popular Ray Donovan on Showtime. These characters who do really bad things, but they're good people. So,
yeah,
you know,
the anti-hero.
Like, uh-huh. Yeah, exactly, the anti-hero. How do they exist? And so for villains, boy, they just can never transcend that duality, you know, good versus
mm-hmm.
evil. But I'm good, but I'm in this evil situation, and these people, these good people, are standing here doing nothing and watching me suffer. You know, well, F you, good people, I'm going to turn
right.
it around on you. You know, so I think that and there's even a genetic reason behind that. There's a lot of psychology studies, and I wish I could quote them all to you, but I'm not going to bore your poor audience. But there's actually MRI imaging shows that people during this particular study where piped into the MRI unit were like sounds of people getting sick or suffering, crying. Areas of these particular individuals' brains actually lit up that they had joy.
Yep.
They found
yep.
pleasure in it. And that's
yep.
that's not their fault. It's not because of any environmental factor. It's genetic. So
mm-hmm.
many people, I mean, a certain percentage of people, it's not many. It's
no.
actually something like 25% is the guesstimate based on these statistics, which are not complete, of course. And so, you know, you have a certain percentage of the population that are hardwired to find pleasure in other people's pain. So, you know,
yeah,
what
yeah,
are you
going to
do, you know?
Yeah. I've done counseling of people like that. I know exactly what you're talking about. And it's sad, but it is hardwired, and it's difficult to overcome. It's difficult for them to overcome because
well,
they get
yeah,
that emotional hit from it. Yeah.
It's not like smoking cigarettes or something. It's not like you can create new neural pathways or new habits, you know,
mm-hmm.
by changing, you know, your old habits, you know, replacing, you know, you essentially by when you stop smoking, I'm sure that you created coping strategies to deflect from, you know, your neural pathways that existed where your brain was saying to you, I really want a cigarette now. You know, I smoked in high school. That was
mm-hmm.
a long time ago, but I still have those neural pathways don't go away. You just
no.
you just reroute them basically
yep.
by creating new ones. And I still have moments, even though I haven't smoked a cigarette since I was probably 16, and even then it wasn't like I was smoking a pack a day. If I had one
right.
a week, it was amazing. It was just to be cool. You know,
right.
like I think I smoked Virginia Slims to be cool in the 80s or something. You know,
right.
I mean,
right.
I'm embarrassed,
mm-hmm.
but that's just the truth. And I still, like, that's how powerful that nicotine is. It's like,
yep.
I mean, I'm really bad at math, but I'm 44. I mean, how long ago was that?
Yeah,
you know, that's
yeah.
like a ridiculous amount of time, and I'm still, you know, like the other day, I'm sitting here, I'm going, geez, I want a cigarette so bad, so bad, so bad. I went and got me some Hershey's Kisses. Like,
yeah.
This is going to be, I got to drug myself with some chocolate right now because I'm going to increase the dopamine, obviously, in my brain. But I really wish that, like, this is what these kinds of seminars I'm talking about and some of these educational initiatives that don't exist yet, but I hope that they do. How great would it be if people understood why they were feeling the way they were feeling and what they could do to make it better temporarily just to get them through so that they don't beat anybody or
yeah.
you know, feel like they must have, you know, must commit a crime in order for life to be better or kill somebody. Like, you know, there are ways, there are coping strategies around these things. There are ways out. we always have a choice. And I think that I've been desperate myself many times. In fact, this year, there were a number of times that I felt so desperate. I was going to do something desperate, not commit a crime against anybody but myself.
Right.
And I thought, you know, there's always a choice. You know, there is always a choice, and it's a choice to do it. You know, philosophers like Sartre, existentialists, you know, actually felt that that was a choice, that suicide was a choice.
Yes.
But I feel like it's not a legitimate, like if that's your choice, it's not a choice. You know,
well,
that's
a choice Kierkegaard took.
Yes, exactly. Many, many, many of our literary, great literary minds and philosophical minds have done that. Hemingway
mm-hmm.
and Sylvia Plath and Virginia Woolf. And, you know, it's an option, but it's a bad option because
yeah.
I've experienced it, and many of us have, just like every hero that we see in a comic book or in Star Wars or Lord of the Rings. Every hero has a really bad day or a really bad year or 10 years, right? You know, like it's like, you know, you can be down for a long time, but as long as you live one more day, you can change it. You can change your stars. I mean, that's what epigenetics really ultimately shows us, to connect it all.
Mm-hmm.
You can literally change your stars. You're born into poverty. It's terrible. It's awful. You have no support. You have no money. And I know there's a lot of paperwork because I've gone through it myself. I get it. It stinks, and you have to. It's like a full-time job to fill out all the paperwork you need to fill out. I get that you don't want to do it, and you just rather, you know, do something else. It's much easier to, like, you know, I'm not suggesting you go and sell drugs, but I'm saying it's much easier if you're looking at your options and you're like, oh, I can go and fill out paperwork for the next 5 years, or, you know, and go to school and be beaten up by these professors who think that they're better than me, but they're not because they're soft. And, you know, I mean, I didn't do well in academia because I grew up literally in the projects in this city called Brockton.
Uh-huh.
In Massachusetts, about 30 miles south of Boston. Anybody that's from the area and listening to your show right now is going, oh, yeah, because Brockton's bad. It's real bad. It's bad. And that's where I grew up, in the projects, not even in, like, a little neighborhood or something, you know. So, I don't like, play well with others that didn't have that upbringing, because I don't understand, like, how can you, you know, somebody that tells me, oh, geez, I feel so bad. The Dow is down. I'm like, aw,
yeah.
baby. You know, I can't sympathize with people who, like, feel like that's the worst thing that's ever happened to them when
I've told my kids before, like, when they were younger, not now, they understand it. It's like, oh, I want this, I want that. You're not being fair. You're not giving me this. I said, I'll tell you what, you get in the car, and I'll do, in 15 minutes, I'll go down. We'll go see some people who wish they had your problems. And then I wouldn't hear anything after that. Again, because they know what I was talking about. You know.
Oh, yeah. That's why your job and what you did for a living, what you do as a social worker, my God, that takes a person with a soul. Like, you have to have an extremely bright light inside you to do what you do. I know I couldn't do it. I know I couldn't do it. I just couldn't. But I'm glad there are people like you who do, because someone like you can change people's lives, can give people hope in a way that nobody else can. You know, it's very unique, and it's a gift. It really is. You are a healer.
Thanks.
You know?
I appreciate that. You do the best you can, and sometimes you just plant seeds and hope they grow later, and that's the nature of it. And it's not what you call goal-directed work. You go out in there and just try the best you can and try to show people, you know, better ways of doing stuff and hope to God it takes.
Yeah, and I like what you said, planting a seed. I feel like I do that a lot too, but in a, you know, obviously in a very different way. But I think that's like you said, I won't see a lot of the, like, some of the students. That's why I love teaching, because I would, you know, I'm in touch with almost every student. I've had over 3,000 since I started 20 years ago, more than that now. And I'm in touch with literally 2,000 plus students, you know, former students. And it's very cool. I'm invited to weddings, and I'm like, one of my students became a professional hockey player for the DEL in Germany and invited me there this week. And he was like 28 or 30 when I went there. So it wasn't like,
it wasn't,
might not sound good, but we were only 10 years apart.
He wasn't in the 15-year-old. He wasn't in the 15-year-old junior league, in other words. So you're okay.
No. In fact, he won the championship. You know, basically the equivalent of the Stanley Cup for Germany. He won it.
Uh-huh.
He and his team. So I'm very proud of him. Yeah, Bobby Raymond. Very, very proud of him. And everybody, you know, all these students of mine are like, I've seen this whole group of students that I taught. Almost every single one of them that I'm still in touch with have these unbelievably great lives. You know, everybody has problems, but they're all professional. They all went on to either get graduate degrees or to do the work that they loved. You know, I had a young woman who was in film. She was in the film program, and that's what she graduated with. And she got out into the world, and she was like, oh, no, I don't want to do this now.
Yeah.
You know, she went back. She went back and became an engineer. She you know, yeah, no, I mean, I'm so proud of her. I'm incredibly proud of these people that I still talk to all the time, and they'll tell me the amazing things that they're doing, and a lot of them will come back. And the Joseph Campbell discussion we just had, one of my students, Dan Sullivan, who is actually in the film industry and has worked on projects. New Year's Eve, I think, was a movie he did with, like, Hilary Swank. And you know, he was one of the director's assistant. I mean, he's worked on some, like, major movies and Blue Bloods and all these, you know, TV shows. I'm like, I know people that do this stuff. But he'll talk to me all the time about how Joseph Campbell, in my classes, learning about that stuff, how that's helped him in his actual life. And I think it's awesome. I mean, that's the planting seeds. I don't know. You don't always get to see it, but in that kind of situation, it's pretty awesome when you do get to see it. It's like, oh, wow, hey, all my antics in the classroom actually matter to somebody.
Yeah.
Great.
Exactly. I mean, I've had teachers and stuff and talked. It's like, I forget which one it was, but, you know, talked about Campbell a little bit. But, you know, you say, and then I watched The Power of Myth, his show he did with Bill Moyers on PBS.
Oh, so good.
Amazing. I've got the CD set of that, or DVD set of
Me
that,
too?
And I just love it. Yes. I'm a huge Campbell fan, and you know, we're gonna have to take another time. This talk, we could have talked about the hero's journey the whole time, because we got about what
so
a
true.
Fifth of the way through it. But
I love it. But
yeah, I mean, you know, here you are. You're, you know, in Star Wars. I'm gonna age myself here. Star Wars comes out in 1977. I'm 20 years old, and you're sitting there, and not only do you see all this, I mean, you know, the game has changed in the movie industry, the very first scene where they, you know, get that little ship going along there and shooting. Here comes this big Corellian cruiser, and you think, oh, my God, I've never seen anything like that before in my life. And so you got that technical hook that gets you in there. And all of a sudden, you know, that you're watching the movie, and this is, you know, I was a big sci-fi fan. I see all this stuff. And so finally you get to that one part where Luke meets Obi-Wan, and I don't know if I cried then when I heard, I have since. Because it just struck such a chord in me, and I don't often cry, is when they're sitting in, you know, in Obi-Wan's house, and they're talking about, you know, he sees the Princess Leia ask him to come help, and Obi-Wan looks at him and goes, you must learn the ways of the Force if you're going to come with me to Alderaan. And it's like, that's the call right there. That is the call to adventure, and the call to me was the call into the world of shamanism and of chi and of energy, because I'm kind of a Taoist in a way, which involves, which is more what a Jedi is. It's more like a Taoist. I mean, with as far as energy and whatnot. And it's like, and to this day, it still gives me chills whenever I watch that scene. And that's pop culture, and it meant so much to me at the time, and it still does.
It's funny you mentioned Star Wars. A lot of the celebs I've worked with all mention Star Wars as the beginning point for themselves. James Marsters, who was Spike in Buffy and Angel, if there are any Whedon fans listening in your audience, and J. August Richards, who also is part of the Whedonverse, and played Deathlok recently in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and, you know, many, and in 1977, I was 6 years old, and I did see it in theaters, believe it or not. You know, my mom was actually like a big sci-fi fantasy fan, and even though it was probably wildly inappropriate for me to see, it didn't, you know, at that time, though, I mean, today, kids see a lot worse at younger ages, but, you know, she was like, oh, we're going. <I'm> like, that sounds good to me. You know, I saw all of those in the theaters, and I'm so proud to say that I've seen those in the theaters, even though I was very young, because it, I mean, I remember the impact, like you said, even at those ages. I remember when Obi-Wan said that in the theater, and I didn't know about Joseph Campbell yet. I didn't know about any of the things I do today.
Uh-huh.
But I remember that same feeling of like,
yep.
Oh, the adventure is about to begin. I remember distinctly thinking, oh, good, because now we're going to see some action. You know, like before that, there was plenty of action, but I figured there was going to be even more action now.
That's right.
You know, I was like, I mean, I knew story. I'd been reading, actually, even at 6 years old, I'd been reading for several years and reading comic books, too. So I was very, like, I knew, understood story, and I was like, oh, this is it. This is where the good stuff's about to happen. You know, my little pigtail sitting there chewing gum probably going, good stuff's about to happen. Yay. You know, but that Star Wars has influenced all those people. James Marsters got to see the pre-screening of it in Marin County, which is where Lucas lived and still lives.
Yeah.
He had like a commune with like Coppola and a bunch of other very famous film people today. And they like were all living in this big house and supporting Lucas while he's writing the script for 2 years. And then, you know, the movie's being screened, and James Marsters was one of these people who was invited like to come and like young people to come and watch it. And he actually wrote a letter to George Lucas at 13. He was 13 years old. He was a little bit older than me. And and he was saying in the letter how he didn't feel like certain parts were authentic.
That's
very James Marsters, you know. He's like, hey, this isn't authentic, you know, or he uses this. It's supposed to be like a samurai sword. I felt like I felt samurai, but I wasn't seeing samurai. I was like, oh. Jeez, that's like how much that impacted everybody.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like literally all the different stars I worked with, almost everybody I've worked with has that's even younger than me, has talked about how Star Wars was that influential in their careers and in their lives. And it's just remarkable. I can't wait to see the movie. Are you excited about the new movie?
I am very excited. You know, after the last three, I'm like, and there were some good parts of it. I mean, I love Qui-Gon, Liam Neeson playing Qui-Gon. I love some of that stuff, but some of it was, I wish George wouldn't write his own scripts. I'm glad he didn't do it this time. I'm glad that no, I forgot the guy's name. The bad robot guy took it over. That you know, I think he's going to do. He might do a better job overall, just in storytelling and making it look, you know, making it feel better. You know, he loved George's vision and everything else, but I've always thought his screenplays had a lot to be desired, especially the last three movies. So. It's just great stuff. I'll tell you what, we're gonna have to schedule another time, because I'm gonna do the story here. I want you to hang on, because we're gonna talk about the Mineral Wells Paracon. And, so we're gonna talk about that in a minute, and we're gonna talk about where I'm gonna be doing, what you're gonna be doing, and all that kind of good stuff. So hang on with us, Rebecca, and it's time for the story. And this is a story that was told by Morning Dove in the book Coyote Stories of all things. But it's called Porcupine Learns the Sun Dance. Now, in kind of a preface here, sun dance is big, powerful medicine. In the Lakota tradition, you do the sun dance. It's one of their main ceremonies. It's a very sacred ceremony, very powerful ceremony. And sun dancers are very revered and can become very powerful medicine people. So they're talking about the sun dance here. And this is very big stuff to have this type of medicine. But, of course, this is back in the old days and when animals could talk to people and do all sorts of things. And so the Hakamal fly people had the Svinglum, the sun dance, first. The sun dance was theirs. It was their medicine. Many people wanted to learn the sun dance to discover the power of the flies, and many went to the flies' village to learn the dance. But none ever returned. They were eaten by the crawlers that hatched the eggs of the flies. The Hakamal kept their secret well. One time, Coyote went to the dance. As he danced, he became covered with eggs. Crawlers hatched from the eggs and ate most of him. What was left of flies threw outside their camp. There the remains were found by Fox, who stepped over them three times. That restored Coyote to life. Fox had big medicine. If he stepped over somebody three times, he could bring you back to life. Then Coyote went in search of someone to help him learn the secret of the sun dance.
He met Quilkin, Porcupine, a brave man. He asked Porcupine to go back with him to the Fly Village, and Pine Barrowhead went. When they got to the camp, Coyote told Porcupine to go and dance while he watched. So Porcupine went on in and danced with the flies. They laid eggs all over him. But the eggs did not bother Porcupine. Every little while, he would shake himself hard, and the creepers that had crawled from the eggs would be killed on his sharp quills. The flies laid more and more eggs on Porcupine. He kept shaking himself and killing the crawlers. He was too much for the flies. He killed all of them, too, except a very few small ones. They were permitted to live. Hereafter, flies will not kill anybody, Porcupine told the little flies, because the flies were big enough to eat people. There shall be no more big flies to kill people. After this, only that which is dead shall be egg-laying place of the flies. So that is how the flies lost the center of their sun dance and their big medicine power, because a porcupine is no longer was a secret. The new people, the people who came to this world, when they came, were able to learn the sun dance and gain that power. And that is how it was a long time ago. So, Rebecca, where are you going to be? What's going on in your life these next few months?
Well, there's actually a lot of exciting stuff happening. By the way, I love that story.
Thank you.
It's a great story because I believe in totem medicine and spirit animals, and I mean I have so many, and I actually saw a fox three times, and so when you said that fox stepped over three times and it brought someone back to life, it resonated with me, so that was really great.
There you go.
Next month, I know.
I wonder why I picked that story. It must have been why. Okay, because
I think so. I love it. I love when things come together, like the A-Team. I love it when the plan comes together.
That's right.
pop culture again. I'll be in L.A. I'm going to be doing Chimichanga Superstar at the end of the month, and I'll be doing a comedy show with them, and I think it's a fundraiser comedy show. I'm not sure even where it is. I'm very vague on details. But, you know, somebody will tell me at some point. Somebody will tell. I just go where people tell me. I don't even know what's happening half the time. And then I come back from that, and I'm skipping Dragon Con this year, unfortunately. I have to give a shout-out to my friend, my gal pal, Rachel Reeves. She puts on a great show out there, but I couldn't go because of the soccer. I mean, I could, but I didn't want to endanger people. So I'm not doing that this year, sadly, but lots of my friends are. And, like, Patrick Doyle will be there, so, from Ghost Mind. So I hope you guys go out and see him. And then I'll be in Tennessee. Now, this is going to appeal to your paranormal people and probably you, too. The Old South Pittsburgh Hospital in Tennessee, it's a big event. And Cody St. New from Teen Wolf is going to be there. My friend Gary Brown from ASAP Entertainment invited me. And Molly O'Conley. And Molly and I are both going to be at Mineral Wells.
Right.
Hopefully, I'm not making an official announcement. It's not official. But, my friend Grant Wilson, who I, love and adore, and, he and I are on, we're on the same frequency is the best way to put it.
He's a good guy, yeah.
He's a great guy, and before tonight's show, he had sent me a text saying, break a leg, so he's, very supportive guy, and he is... He is looking at his schedule for Mineral Wells Paracon, which is huge.
Oh, that is
huge. I hope he comes. It's going to be awesome. I know. I really hope that happens. And so I'll be at Mineral Wells, and I think that's my fall. I think so. Do I have something? I think I might be going to Tombstone. I have to talk to Gary about that. I'm not sure, but I might be in Tombstone in November. That's another big paranormal hotspot, by the way.
It is. Just be careful. I mean, I'm not sure who's putting it on. The last time they tried to put on a big paranormal thing there, it crashed and burned. So, it sounds like somebody's different. I mean, I'm not going into that story, but this is what I heard. So,
I know that story,
watch yourself.
And it's not. It's Gary. Gary is my friend. Gary's putting it on, and he's doing
good.
Lot of South Pittsburgh. Yeah, no, he's legit, and, Patrick Doyle, like Molly O'Conley, is one of my clients, actually. So, and he's already contracted for that. So, it's legit. Gary is super, but I totally know that story. And that's the sad part about the paranormal, which I think people like Bill and Danielle, and in fact, there's going to be a guest at the Mineral Wells Paracon who
who is from New England, Maine, I think, and very well known for kind of exposing paranormal con men, because that's kind of a big deal in the field, which is sort of sad because
yeah,
I think it's a great field but it seems to attract a lot of con men, people use it to fool others, you know.
Well, they're trying to get on television, you know, so they want to make all these wild claims and stuff like that. They're not in it for the right reasons. And, you know,
well, they also like take people's money, you know.
That's it too. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't get it, but you know, anyway, to each their own. But I can't wait
to
go to Mineral Wells because that guest list is like power packed.
I can't
even believe. Also, I don't know if the people know this about Mineral Wells Paracon, but it's only a 3-hour drive, which is not a long time, people. To Roswell, Alien Central.
Wow.
I'm renting a car and I'm going. I am going to Area 51. I'm going to feel the vibration. But if something happened there, I'll know.
Well, I'll tell you what. Make sure you get your because you're moderating a panel there. So make sure you do that before you go get yourself locked up in some Air Force dungeon, okay?
Well, I have these fabulous boobs. They're magical boobs. And they help me in and out of all kinds of situations.
All sorts of situations.
So, they were given to me. This is my totem medicine.
Oh, I hear you. Okay, listen,
open doors.
We're going to bring Danielle and Bill on in a second here. We're going to talk more about the Mineral Wells Paranormal Paracon. First of all, I want to let everybody know what I'm up to. September 10th will be my next show. We'll have the Ghosts of St. Louis. There are some new guys out across the river for me, so we're going to have them on. And on September 24th, I'll be proud to have Jim Mallard on. And Jim is one, Duckman himself from the Mallard Report will be here with us September 24th. And Jim and Wes are the two guys I always kind of look up to when it comes to you know, doing podcasts and doing shows and stuff like that. I've learned a lot from listening to both of them. Speaking of Wes Forsythe, I will be with Wes at Scarefest, 11th through 13th of September. I'll be hanging out at the Paranormal Filler booth, promoting my regular segment, as Wes loves to call it, Shamanigans. And so we have T-shirts which say Shamanigans on it. I have a little badge I have to wear. It says my picture on it. It says Shamanigans on it. And so Wes is making sure that I advertise Shamanigans wherever I can go. But since I do the segment on his show, I'm just pleased to do it. So stop by and see us down there. They're going to have Steve DeShavi and Amy Allen. Brian J. Cano is going to be there. Let me see who else is a big guy. Ben Hansen is going to be there. Josh Gates is going to be there. I'm just thinking of paranormal folks. I don't do the horror stuff so well, so I don't know much about it. But be a lot of nice people there. And, you know, Steve and Amy, I was on Dead Files Revisited, so I've met Amy before. I'm looking forward to meeting Steve. His booth is right across from ours, so looking forward to having a few drinks with him sometime during that stay down there. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And I will be promoting the Mineral Wells Paracon while I'm down there. And with that segue, let's bring on Bill and Danielle, and let's talk about the Mineral Wells Paracon. Hey, guys, how's it going?
Hello, hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Rebecca.
So hey, my hot doctor. I got to bring the dirt into Coyote Chris's show.
Oh, here we go.
I like it.
I know you do, and Coyote don't do it enough. He's
Chris
gotta
is going to hang up.
He's got to loosen that collar, that tight leash around his coyote neck.
I can get dirty. I can get dirty as the next guy. We just never got there. We got into this stuff. I didn't have sex toy jokes on my list, but I will admit that. However,
my ears are bleeding. Coyote, don't you ever say that again. My ears just bled.
Okay. I know. But, you know, I just want to show that I can get into that stuff, too, is that we never got there, you know, all things spiritual.
Wait till next week. Coyote story. It's going to be filthy.
Yeah, filthy. That's right. It's going to be like the Penthouse Reader, you know.
I'm having
penthouse.
A panic attack. I'm having a panic attack.
All right, well, we better get on the Mineral Wells then before this really starts disintegrating.
I want to say one thing first to the both of you.
Okay.
And it's that Mineral Wells Paracon, myself, Bill, and Lisa are so proud to have you guys involved in the Paracon.
Absolutely.
It is an honor.
Yeah,
that's number one. Number two, you guys have been great friends of ours for a long period of time, and it makes us feel great that you're on this journey with us, the first annual Mineral Wealth Paracon. Hopefully there's many more to come.
Yay.
That's right.
Thank you. I'm very excited, and I'm honored. I was so, I really, at the time when we talked about all this stuff, you know, I needed, like, somebody to believe in me so bad, and you did, and I was like, oh, my God, thank you so much. It, like, changed everything for me.
Well, we were
like,
lucky
for you to
come on board, Doc. You helped us out tremendously. It's freaking exciting. And one of the things, I don't mean to interrupt Danielle, I'm going to let her go in one second, but I get to meet Danielle's got, she knows you, and I can't wait to meet you, and I can't wait to meet Chris, and I can't wait to meet all these people we've got to talk to. It's going to be a good time.
Oh, it's going to be a phenomenal time. And just with our lineup, you know, Molly O'Connelly and Alejandro Dominguez, the Dead Explorer, and Scott Grunewald, and Rebecca will be doing the Q&A for Alejandro Dominguez after the screening of his very private documentary that won't be released until after the Paracon.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be loads of fun. Absolutely loads of fun.
Very excited for that.
We just have like a really great lineup, and Rebecca has been there for us the entire way, teaching us the ways of a con. Oh, and I don't mean that.
That's another coyote story right there.
I don't mean that in a bad way. I should have said Paracon. But really teaching us the ways of how things should be done so that this becomes a successful event. And, of course, we wanted to add Coyote Chris to this event because having a shaman at an event like this is something kind of new. You know, I've done a lot of research on these events. It's something that Bill and I have thought of for the past year because Incubi Incarnate Broadcast Network will be a year old come September 3rd. It's something I've really thought of.
Yeah.
Oh,
thank you.
And let me tell you, you guys were the two that had faith in us. Pop Culture Press Professor approved in Double Ink. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You guys had the faith in us that we could do it, and we did. And we push forward as hard as we can. We kind of have to tighten the reins on some people, but it all comes with what it is. You know, it all comes with the field.
It's really hard to do. It's hard to pull off any kind of convention of any kind, a Paracon, especially, you know, we were talking earlier about the disaster of, like, the prior Tombstone one, and I think you guys, because you have such a united front and you know, you've been in the business really for a long time, and you promote paranormal actual research, and you know, the spirituality that you have yourselves, I think that you promote this positive energy, and it's just going to come through at that con, and it's going to be successful. I just know it. I'm declaring.
Yep.
And we have a few surprises up our sleeves for our wonderful guests. So that's going to be a little bit fun. And of course, Coyote Chris will be performing maybe a little bit of a really epic event for Bill and I.
Yep.
That's
right.
You know, he might be performing our wedding ceremony, so...
Yeah.
You know, it's like a big, huge reunion of social media and paranormal proportions. And we tried to get the right people involved. You know, Deacon Christina Rake, the veterans of our country, the ones that fought for us to have the freedom, to have internet radio, to be able to Facebook, to do all of this. If it weren't for them, we would have nothing. And to give back to them, it was actually an idea that started before we became involved in the Paracon. It was an idea that started with Lisa Lamrock, who was our partner. She's with Spurs Texas. And it was an idea that started with her because the VFW Post 2399 that's going to be part of the investigation was an old insane asylum prior to the VFW buying it. And it was something that she wanted to do. It was something she wanted to give back to the vets. And I'm sorry, Bill, but Bill losing his brother in Iraq during the war, it became near and dear to us as well. And we're going to have the Patriot Guard riders there, and it's going to be a big, huge opening ceremony. And any money that we make, we're giving some proceeds to the vets. So it's just something that was near and dear to all of us in some kind of a way, for our freedom, for the fact that it was Bill's brother, and many other things that come into play.
Yeah, and
oh,
the Patriot
Bill,
Guard is
sorry.
Is
oh, my God.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah. Wow.
The Patriot Guard was here for my brother's service.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bill, why don't you tell them what the Patriot Guard does with the Westboro Baptist Church?
Yeah, what if nobody knows, a friend of mine actually just a couple of months before my brother passed away was killed over there, and with his funeral, the Westboro Baptist Church came over and protested and held up signs.
Assholes.
And then when it was time for my brother's, the Patriot Guard came over. What they do is for people that don't know this, they build a wall, basically. They do a big show, too, like a very honorable, respectful show where they, like here, they drive down Main Street, and then they go to the side of the service and everything, but they build a wall between the family and the protesters with flags, motorcycles, and they'll start their motorcycles and rev them if people start protesting to where the family has no clue, you know. Luckily, the church didn't come over here and protest my brothers, but the Patriot Guard was there just in case, and they do a lot of good stuff. They, you know, a lot of them travel a long ways, and it's not just funerals and stuff they go to. You know, when a body comes home or whatever, they go there and guide it back into town or whatever, you know, whatever the case may be.
Wow.
They do amazing things. They're awesome.
Oh,
yes,
wow.
Absolutely. And what we're doing as well is putting together gift bags for all of these men that come, and women, because there are some women that are involved in the Patriot Guard.
Exactly.
We're putting together gift bags for them so that they finally get a little something back. You know, they do this selflessly. They do it for the right of their country, for the right of people that are doing what gives us the right to do what we're doing today. And so we're putting together gift bags for them. And if anybody would like to donate anything at all, we're taking any kind of donations, whether it's one thing or 20 things or 150 things. We're taking as much as we can just to give these guys a little something to say thank you.
That's great.
Oh, my gosh.
It's great to have them start the thing. And I thought that was a unique, and I thought that's really cool. You know, we're in VFW. That's a good way to start it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this Paracon's a little bit different in the sense of where we're not looking at the bottom line dollar for us personally, for Bill, myself, and for Lisa. We're looking to do something for the people that have done stuff for us selflessly.
Mm-hmm. Bless your heart.
Amazing, amazing.
And we're just hoping that it becomes successful. Ticket sales have been going crazy. Vendor table
great.
Sales. Just everything, and we really thank all of you for everything that you have done, all the promotion you guys have done, all the sales you guys have pushed, and Rebecca for helping us with all of the wonderful talent you have gotten us, and Coyote for being a part of this, being a part of our wedding. That, to me and Bill, is the most important thing out of all of this.
Yeah.
And
that's cool.
It turns into something that Bill and I will hold on to forever. Although it's going to be paranormal proportions because we're getting married on a haunted staircase, and you know, I hear crazy stories about the Baker Hotel having like ghosts that come to the haunted Hill House and like they're going to scratch me in the face. Like, I don't know, but
coolest wedding ever.
And then your minister has coyote medicine. Yeah, this is going to be smooth.
Exactly right. And perhaps I might murder Bill beforehand, and we'll have to get his EVP if I do, as I drag his body through the body bag down the aisle. But, you know, I have Lisa on hand to grab his feet. I'll grab the head. It'll be all good.
Yeah.
We have people that have bought tickets all the way from Australia.
Australia, that's great.
Yeah, Mama Owl, right? Mama Owl.
Exactly.
That is correct. And let me tell you, Rebecca, she can't wait to meet you. She's dying.
Huge fan she is.
I can't wait to meet her. We have so much in common. It's crazy. 24
that's
hours
scary
right
that
away.
The two of you.
Yeah, I know. We connected. Like, it's That's what Twitter is like, magical. I think it's magic.
It is.
I consider it,
is.
It a magical element.
I think
element.
It is. You know, we have all met people in crazy ways. I mean, Rebecca,
yeah.
You definitely know how I met Bill,
oh,
and it was through Twitter.
Yes.
And I know
well,
Coyote
I had
knows.
A Twitter. Yeah, we all had. I've had a Twitter. I mean, that's my, you know, the person that I really love in my life. You know, is like Twitter. Guy,
sock
so
party.
Amazing.
I what I told you today. Sock party. I mean, I don't know. I told you 50K, Rebecca. 50K, don't worry.
No, we can't do that. I moved from there so I wouldn't have to kill anybody. Come on now.
No, but you won't be involved. Listen, Rebecca, you know, you're from New York. You know the old grease ball, nobody rats.
You never take sides against the family.
You never go against the family. But listen, thank you so much for Coyote.
Our positive energy might change it. Maybe it will change it. You never know.
Yes, and I think that we all have this positive energy that goes out there. I think that the people that myself and Bill have connected with through the Incubi Incarnate Network have just mm-hmm. been absolutely phenomenal. Like, I haven't met someone that I can't stand. And I can't stand a lot of people. Like, I have issues with everybody. I'm like, this MF right here. Like, I truly haven't experienced that too much, yet with being really out there in this field. But before Bill and I go and let you close out your show, I did want to wish a very, very, very happy 31st birthday to Jim Mallard of the Mallard Report. I wanted to tell him he's becoming an old bee just like the rest of us. You'll get there, Jim.
Thank God. That's too young.
Oh, I know. He's too much of a baby. Jim, you're catching up, though. It's coming very slowly up the lines. But thank you so much, Chris, for having us on, for promoting Mineral Wells. Thank you, Rebecca, for being part of the Incubi Incarnate Broadcast Network. Both of you for being
you
part of Mineral Wells Paracon. We love you.
Woo!
And I just hey, who's screaming? Rebecca, put it away.
That would be the good time.
After the show, Rebecca. After the show. I know what's in your dishwasher.
Yeah, I showed you that. Did I really?
You sent me the picture. I almost passed out. My face turned beet red.
She showed me. She said, what is that? And I said, it's not a scrubber, I'll tell you that.
At least I have Rebecca to teach me.
Wedding night gift.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm getting warm. I'm getting very warm.
Yeah. It's one of those things, Bill, you can never compare to.
No, I know. I don't want to. If it takes batteries, I can't compete with that.
Oh, my God. Okay, I'm out of here. You guys, I love you guys. Thank you so much
you too,
for
buddy.
Being part of the Mineral Wells Paracon. You guys have just made it complete. You know, we have John Tenney, Scott Grunewald, Molly O'Connelly, Alejandro Dominguez, Chelsea DeMali, John Brightman, Deacon Christina Rake,
Selena.
Randy Hardy, Brian J. Cano, Christopher St. Booth, and everybody else I'm forgetting at the moment.
Selena,
I'm forgetting.
I
said that all
incredible.
Rest, so I forgot them all.
Yeah.
If I forgot you, you still matter, and we still love you.
Oh,
and Chris. And
yes,
Chris
dear.
And Rebecca. Bill did a little work on the big banner for Mineral Wells today, and you both look like outlaws. That's all I got to say.
I'll send you guys your personal pictures in there. It turned out awesome.
You look like outlaws. I'm arresting you both as soon as you show up. Love you guys.
Like
as long as my cleavage is showing, I'm okay.
Rebecca, you can't deny the cleavage showing. I mean, we couldn't even crop it. We tried to smudge it. It doesn't work.
No.
You can't rub it out, and then Bill's trying to rub it out. I'm like, don't rub it so hard. Like, what are you doing? Stop rubbing it.
Hey, take it easy.
Yeah. Well, like I said one time, it's 8:00 in the morning, she sends out a bikini picture. I'm like, what are you doing? I said, here, I'm getting my blood running at this time of the day, for goodness sake.
Bill's getting, Coyote's getting his blood pressure checked, and she's going, boom, he's
I know,
dead.
I had to,
dead, Coyote.
They're admitting him. He's like, I just came
to
CVS
and goes,
yeah.
Well,
hey,
I can't help
thank
myself,
both of you guys
y'all.
For for letting us come on for a minute. Happy birthday, Jim, and you guys had a great show. I'm going to get off of here, and thanks again for having us on.
Love you guys.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Bill, you started all this, buddy. You got this thing rolling. We really appreciate it, you and Danielle. So.
Absolutely.
Hey. It's Danielle and Bill.
Danielle, I'm sorry. That's right. Bill's the sidekick. I forgot.
That's right. I'm a side bitch. It's okay. I'm good with that.
Okay.
Love
hey,
you guys.
Thanks,
take care.
Love you, too.
Love you, too.
Rebecca, thank you so much for
Chris,
being on. And
that was so
I can't
much
wait.
Fun.
It was. I can't wait till we catch up in December. We'll be back on. And like I said, I got about three of the points, my bullet points on my notes. So we got much more to talk about. If not, if you guys come to the Mineral Wells, you can come just come sit and listen to her and I carry on about this stuff if you're interested. So, thank you. It was great to finally talk to you in person. And I love what you're doing on Twitter. I love your positive energy, and keep it up, and I look forward to seeing you.
Hey, thanks. And, Chris, can I just quickly give people my website before we hang up? Thank
sure.
you. If people want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Doc Housel, DocHousel. And I'm also on Instagram, same handle, and Facebook, Dr. Rebecca Housel, Google+. And then, of course, my website, RebeccaHousel.com, and there's a blog on there that's pretty popular over, I think now, I have lost count, actually.
It's a great blog. I love your blog.
Yeah, and one thing I wrote recently had to do with what we were talking about, chaos. I think I heard in your intro you talked about chaos, and I wrote a piece called Going Down, #GoingDown, that's from the perspective of chaos.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll have to check it out and let me know.
I got to check it out. Okay, sounds good. Listen, dear, you take care of yourself and stay safe until December.
Thanks, you too.
Okay, I will do. And, my website is www.coyotechris.com. I'm at @CoyoteChrisS on Twitter and Christopher Sutton or Coyote Chris Sutton on Facebook. Everybody have a great evening. Glad you listened. Hope you had some fun. Hope you learned some things. Blessings to you all, and remember to follow your dreams. Good night.
Thank you for listening to this presentation on the EQ by Incarnate Broadcast Network.
May be leaving for now, but the nightmares will return.